Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
As we continue our special broadcast here in Kaya House with a live broadcast, as my guest, Terry Kalafeng, joins us live here with his brand new book, Rooted and Rising. Again, thank you, Tebe, as
thank you
we
so much.
Launch your fantastic book. You spoke a little bit about names and what they mean in our different cultures, but you also delve deeply into the story behind the names. And if we are conscious, that in itself is an entire window into this person and their history. If I asked you, so Pimelo, what does Pimelo mean?
Correct. Matter of fact, and you know how it works as well, right? When somebody says Pimelo Motin, because in African cultures, what I deal with as well is that in African culture, when I say Pimelo Motin, I am taking an entire village with me.
Yep.
And I now need to connect how that village connects with my village.
Yeah.
And that's what names mean. But also the name Pimelo on its own. So our names individually and collectively, you take an entire village with you. So I was telling a story the other day of my first trip into the continent was to Botswana, where my grandfather is from. My grandfather was born in Botswana in 1983. So he was born in Botswana. Obviously, my grandmother is from South.
They're listening.
Are they listening? What's going on?
It's too late now.
But my first trip was into an African, other fellow African country was 94, I think, because I came back to South Africa in 94. So I was 94 into Botswana. And we'd gone to bury my auntie. When I look at the name, I always undo the name, but now I'm looking at obituary, and it's the name says Sebodu.
Yeah, now, you speak of that a lot.
Now, Sebodu is rot, it's a smell, it's a stench. So now I'm saying to my people, hi man, come on now, why are we calling such a wonderful person Sebodu?
Bumatlakala.
Budikeledi. You know our names? They said, Tebe, hold up. Sebodu is because she was born after a stillborn. And after a stillborn in our culture, in order to ward off the evil spirits, what we then do, we give them the name that is unattractive.
So that they can stay away. They can't take the baby.
So they can stay away and not take away this baby.
Yeah.
When that penny dropped, I'm like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Another young mentee of mine, out of interest, because our names are interesting.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Lopo. And he says to me, and I write about it in the book, he says to me, you know, when I first, he says, throughout my life, I hated my name. Because Hlopa is too pesty. You are pesty, you are Hlopa.
You are a problem.
You are a problem. And says his auntie then set him down. He says, no, child, we named you because we wanted you to become a disruptor. He says, as soon as the name was shifted from Hlopa to be a disruptor, he says it changed how he looked at himself and how he looked at his role in society. Because our names, because most of us, the names we're given, we rise up to define them or to defy them.
You say that we, as an African people, we are our biggest net worth. We should recognize ourselves as the biggest net worth asset.
Yes. And we can look at it both culturally and commercially. So commercially, we can speak about that all day.
Yeah.
3 billion people, almost $4 trillion. So that's just the commercial value. That's if you look at us as a, if you look at us as commodities. But if you look at us from a cultural perspective, you then get to realize that for us, how we move forward as a people is when we move together. And that's why we say in African culture, if you want to go far, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. Because collectively, we are an unmovable force. And that's why, for example, and I think I referred to some of the interesting things in the book about some of the tribal, and let's be just the South African ones, because for a South African audience, that if you look at Amavenda, for example, Amavenda, when they speak, when you see them here in Johannesburg, even their motto during the Bantustans years used to speak about Shomela Venda. They say we work from home because how we measure our worth as a people. We don't look at Pamela or Tebe or somebody and say, oh my God, he drives a Ferrari. He lives in a triple story. We look at how your community looks at you. We look at how your community has been uplifted. And that's why we'll say, when people say, give Pamela Mutin, oh, we know Pamela.
Wanahamang.
Have you seen what she's done, where she comes
back
from?
Back home.
Because she lifted the whole community. Because that's how we measure ourselves. Our worth is how the community rises when you rise.
Yeah. Yeah, we can clap to that. Some of the things that you talk to us about quite deeply is being able to proudly wear your African identity in a constantly changing world, and how you should never be conflicted by what your tradition, your culture is, as opposed to, and you don't have to be picking. It's not either or. You can evolve with your identity in this modern world easily.
Well, if you look at W.E.B. Du Bois, who I think in 1895 became the first African to get a PhD at Harvard, and he died in Ghana. His graveyard is still in Ghana. He then left America, I think late in his 70s or 80s, to emigrate to America, because he wanted to come to Africa to have his remains buried there. He said something interesting. He speak about what you call double consciousness. And double consciousness, and he was reflecting on the conflict that that African Americans were having about about how to fit in generally a racially based culture, which requires you to give up where you are and adapt to what. And he said, in articulating that double consciousness, he speaks to the idea that you don't have to choose. Because part of who you are now as a person is your inherited culture as somebody exposed to a Western world, but also your inherent culture as an African.
And you would know this as a marketer, that actually it is when you cloak yourself in your pure identity that actually you would stand out.
Well, I mean, there's an example I put in there personally. As you know, the way I wrote the book, I had some excerpts of anecdotal.
Yes.
Just to connect the ideas.
And you also give us examples of
correct. Yeah. And then the book, and I explained to people, this book, Rooted a Traveler is my memoir. It's my story. Rooted and Rising is our story. So part of what I write there is those examples of how we stand out when we stand out. And I put example of when I was invited to dinner in London by Brand Finance. It was a black tie. They wrote it very clearly, black tie, so we can't get confused. And I pitched up in a colorful kente, and everybody else had tuxedos.
Yes.
And that's it's an iconic picture. I like it. It's in the book somewhere. And you'll see everybody. And it's, again, it was male and pale. So they were all white guys surrounding me, all dressed manela and the white shirts and the bow ties. And here I stand out. They spent the entire evening
talking about you.
Talking about me. And it was that's when the penny dropped to me and said, we are very interesting. We are colorful. We stand out. When we become ourselves, we are interesting people.
Yeah.
Instead of us trying to become the other. Had I come in the black and white t-shirt,
I'd be like one of them.
Well, I was be like them. Yeah. And that's why I think Dangaremba, Tsitsi Dangaremba, right there.
Yes.
He says, you are one of them.
Yeah.
But not one of them.
Yes.
It speaks to that double consciousness, but that distinction as well. That we can fit in, but we do stand out for who we are.
19 minutes after 8 o'clock, as we continue our special broadcast with a live audience and our guest being Tebe Ikalafeng, as we talk about his latest book, Rooted and Rising. So there are difficult conversations in this book. We started about the fluff and the nice things, but you very quickly go into the difficult lessons about failure, about challenges in life, and how to still stand tall as you face the world that is ever-changing, and because we're human, where you will bump into some difficult pit stops.
Because I think, is it Atlas Justice, I can't remember but I've written there, says, to every season there's a reason.
Mm-hmm.
or something of that nature. So because the world doesn't necessarily continue according to how you think life is going to be. There's going to be multiple challenges because we are human after all, and none of us is perfect. And not being perfect means that we are going to face headwinds. Sometimes we're going to make the wrong choices. Sometimes we're just going to get distracted. But what you love and what I deal with, what I like to focus on the book, is as Africans, your village will always welcome you back. So, and I didn't write about it, but I can use another example. That when Uhuru Kenyatta was accused by the ICC for the 2009 or 2007 riots in Kenya. Now remember, he's Kikuyu and he's Kenyan, he's royal. And when he was, when the ICC wanted to get him into the ICC, the Kikuyus and the Kenyans broadly, they said, he's our child. We will not allow him to go there. The beauty about the village is it will always rally around its own. It will also it will also forgive you when you humble yourself and come back home. And so while I highlight in the book examples of some people who perhaps have been affected by choices and changing seasons and all those, also the key part of the book is the fact that as a villager, being rooted means that you can always come back to your roots.
And as you touch on that, you then speak about after the stumble. After the stumble, what's important is humility.
Humility. Very, very important for the village to welcome you back. You have to humble yourself. Because the village wants people who understand their connection to the village, who are able to understand the challenges they faced. But most importantly, who know where home is. You know as well. It doesn't matter what happens in life. You can always go home to your mama and your papa.
The
village is your mama and your papa.
But you also speak of knowing your essence. When all else fails, go back to your own essence.
Go back to your values. Because your values are your roots. Because, you know, they say that your values and a culture, obviously, are your roots. Because they say that the way that a tree, I don't know if you know how the tree grows. The tree first goes deep. Then it goes up. And it goes as high as it's gone deep. And when the roots are deep, no wind can shake that tree. It will always stand firm. So it's quite important that when you are rebranding. I wanted to say when you want to
recalibrate,
you always go back to the foundations that and the community that built you. That's why, by the way, and yes, I mean, I've made one or two other examples. Like, let's say Jacob Zuma out of interest. Let's use JZ out of interest. Because I've used interesting examples. So I've used examples we can relate
people
to. Because I wanted to make sure the book is not a textbook. And with JZ, for example. Every time, even let's look in South Africa. Every time when they, when he was under immense pressure, and everybody wanted Zuma must go. What did he used to do well? He always used to retreat to KZN. And when he get to KZN, what did he do? He never spoke isiLungu. He always spoke isiZulu to his people. He arrived as a villager to come and talk to the village. And the village understood him. Didn't matter what we say in the cities. The village was ready to speak to their child. To speak. Do you know, there was another, I didn't put this one in the book, but when the Free State University was rebranding it, and they were having challenges. Remember when the young people had peed into the water, the teas, gave it to the work to the workers, blah blah blah, and it just affected the brand. And the university said, we can't deal with these the alumni, and they are staunch Afrikaners. And I went to Stellenbosch, flew to Stellenbosch. I spoke to them in their language, because I speak Afrikaans fluently. I'm from Kimberley. So I spoke to them in their language in Stellenbosch. And let me tell you, when I left, they said, we may not agree with what you want to do, but we agree with how you respected our language and our culture, and come to us. For that, we support you. So it's quite important to understand that part. It's part of the humility. Mm. I could have come there and said, I'm from Joburg. I speak English with my fake American accent for my weekend. Yeah. I last from New York. Yeah. But I didn't.
Yes.
I arrived there and I said, Mandela said, if you speak to the man in his language, in his mother tongue, it goes to his heart.
Mm. You speak of resilience. You've got some incredible examples in the book. A friend of yours who was in an accident, whose story just was incredible, and how sometimes it's okay if you feel like your friends are ahead of you. You know those overachievers? Those overachievers who've got a PhD at 30. You know those people?
Right.
And you say it. You can still do it at 60. You've got some incredible examples.
Well, I mean, our friend Hepin Jingila, whom everybody knows, a Hall of Fame marketer, a great thinker, where during COVID, he was in his 60s already, he decided to pivot.
Yeah.
He had no difficulties.
Yeah.
He was already successful. And he decided, let me pivot. Because part of the changing seasons is sometimes when you want to change the season.
Yeah.
And he decided to become a lawyer.
Yeah.
Remember, he's already a Hall of Fame marketer.
Mm-hmm.
He's already a former superstar chief marketing officer at some of the blue chip organizations. Mm-hmm. He now becomes a lawyer. This year, September, October, he became Advocate Njengela.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows any one of us can always change. And we should not worry about what other thing people think. See, the beauty about us is the only people that matter is the village.
Mm. Yeah.
Nobody else matters.
Mm.
And you speak about my friend Percy.
Oh.
Percy's story is beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Because Percy was an amazing optometrist, still is. And when he had it, I'm not going to get into the story of how it happened, but he had an accident, became quadriplegic, can't use his hands, can't use his legs, can't use it. Everybody knows Percy Mashige, amazing guy. And when that happened, Percy, when he tells me the story, he says, Tebe, you know, when I recovered 2-3 years later, I then went back to university, and now only have a bachelor's and honors, and I'm teaching sometime, but I'm optometrist, but I can't use my hands anymore. I can't use my feet, and I used to move my mouth to move these things. And he says, when I gave the lecture, I couldn't last 30 minutes, and I just stopped and told the students, please forgive me. He couldn't do more than 30 minutes. This past week, he got an award, African Health Executive of the Year or something of that nature. He's a professor, a full professor at university.
UKZN.
And a PhD, obviously, which he got all after. Some of us can't even get a certificate, samurabaraba, while alive. Percy gets a PhD, a master's, while he has no hands to use and no legs.
But
I'm just saying it out there. He's my friend. I think he's amazing.
But something
he makes us look
out.
Bad.
Something stood out, though, from the very beginning of the story. You say you had heard that there was an accident.
Yes.
You had been speaking to him.
Yes.
But his spirit had never changed.
That's what I couldn't understand. Do you know I speak to Percy on the phone? Percy, tell him, right? It's a vendor boy, amazing guy. Tebe, right? Yeah, you must come visit. You must come visit, Tebe. Speak, that's how he speaks. So
you
now they've told me that he had
sense.
An accident.
Yeah.
Now I have no sense because this guy.
Sounds the same.
He may have been disabled, but he was not unable in terms of his ability to be able to pursue his own dreams.
Yeah.
By the time I saw him.
You were shocked.
No, because I see somebody being wheeled in. I was like, huh?
I was talking to you the other day.
Yes, I knew you had an accident, but I didn't understand this is what accident looks like because you don't look like your accident.
Mm.
So part of what we need to...
Or sound like your
accident. And most of us, we walk around with our problems on our shoulders, on our hands, on our faces. Percy is an example that, George Bernard Shaw says, you don't blame life for the circumstances. You try and create the circumstances you like.
Yeah.
That's what we do, and that's what Percy does.
Mm.
It's a beautiful story. I think it's an amazing story. So, you know, I write with stories.
Yes, and great examples.
Thank you.
Great examples of people who started... By the way, did anybody know that Tebe wanted to be an accountant?
Imagine.
A very good friend of his said, no, stop kidding yourself. He says that in the book, that a friend said, Tabe, it's okay. You are in the U.S. now. You don't have to prove anything. Do what you love.
But you know, the village knows us better than we know ourselves.
Yes, yes.
And that's why even from the naming, from all those things, because they know who we are.
Yes.
So, but most of us don't like what we see. Mm. We should just love what we see on the mirror and go towards that light, because we are that light.
Yeah. I'm going to get a mic to rove around for any of you with questions, so that especially we're going to prioritize those who are here, so that you can ask any question, and then we can we've got about 30 minutes still to go before we go off air with this live broadcast, and you will have an opportunity to ask Tabe anything. What about writing, particularly when you were writing The Traveler? Now, you've been writing books, right?
I've been writing forever. I wrote my first book 6 months after I came back to South Africa.
And that's fine. What I'm keen to ask you is the journey, and you say you write all the time, but when you are done with a book like The Traveler and this one now, what has this journey taught you about yourself?
This journey has taught me more about us and about me. Mm. Because what's so interesting in writing this book is it also became a journey of self-discovery.
Yes.
Because it wasn't, because as I said, it's our book, not my book. Mm. So I discovered us.
Mm.
I got to learn about other cultures. And remember, it's not a South African book.
Yes.
It's a pan-African book. Mm. It's a book including the diaspora. Mm. So as we're writing this book, I got to understand a little bit more about us in multiple places, whether we're in America, whether we're in Senegal, whether we're in Zimbabwe. And I got to, and then I got to know a little bit as well about me. And I was like, oh my God, so this helps me. So I don't want to say therapeutic because I'll be lying.
Yes.
I was just learning. I was learning more about us. But I think also what it did, it sort of affirmed me.
Yes.
It then said, you're good to go. This is you. You are just, and not that I had problems. Not that I had problems about me. I've always been self-assured, clear about myself, and I've always been taken the road less traveled.
Mm.
But having said so, this one here, Rooted and Rising, was an incredible journey.
What I also loved about some of the themes that you touch on here is reassessing what's valuable. So what does success look to you doesn't necessarily have to be what commercial entities call success. You have a fantastic example of a former U.S. president who was a hopeless president, hopeless, but started his journey as a philanthropist, teacher and educator, somebody who was working with youth and all of that, became a terrible president, fails at that, goes back to the community.
Matthew, before you even say failed, remember before he became president,
yes.
people used to champion him.
Yes.
They said,
he's the guy.
You should be a president.
Because you're
and
so
they said,
good
everybody here, yes. We must get this guy.
Yeah.
Like they say about us, because you know our parents, our village, look at us, they say, we're not here, you're going to be. You know, like what you say to your child.
Yeah, yeah.
You say to your children, you are the next president of South Africa.
And he failed. It didn't work, you know.
And what did they say?
And he went back.
But what did they say when it didn't work? Remember what they said? They said, a terrible example of how to become a president.
Yes. But
or a case study.
A case study
on how not to be a president.
Yes.
We know a few in this town, but let's not go there.
you highlight the fact that after that, he spends his remaining years going back to what he did initially.
Yes.
And then he then comes out victorious because that was his essence.
Because most of us, we fashion our careers, our lives, according to what looks good to
others.
People.
Yeah.
What makes money,
mm-hmm.
what makes fame. Mm-hmm. And what Hoover did exactly, started as a philanthropist, somebody does good, but then somebody says, you'll be a president, you must become a president, comrade, let's campaign behind, let's all rally. Then you become a president, because most of us do that. Then we become what they want us to be. But when he went back to his roots, when he rerouted and went back to his root, he found his true joy.
Yeah.
And of course, he succeeded. And 30 years after being a case study on not how to be a president, Ramadan wrote about him. And I wrote this, I saw the story in Time magazine. Mm. And they asked him, Mr. President, because in America they call you president the rest of your life. Yeah. They said, Mr. President, how did you reverse all this? He says, I outlived the bastards.
Yeah, I remember.
But I think what it meant really is I went back to myself, to what matters to
me. Stop playing the games. Tabby, you speak of the sensitivity of shame after failure and how one can deal with the noise, the judgment, the shame of failure. I don't want to talk about the people. He's got them in the book. You'll see them for yourself.
I know I'm going to be sued.
I think you're honest in many of the reflections because you are saying it's not the end of the world.
No. And it never has been for many. Yeah. It never has been. And I speak to, it's to me, it's that pivots I'm talking about. It's that changing seasons I'm talking about. It's that rerouting I'm talking about. That to me, it is always about going back to the village. Because when you get back to the village will always welcome you back, but it will also remind you of what your value is. But it is also about you being honest with yourself.
Said, that's the first thing you said.
Is you need to be honest with yourself.
Acknowledge
yes, acknowledge
it.
That. And then you then need to say, how do I get back to myself? Because you must always get back to yourself.
Yeah.
Because we here, we're going to social media, you're going to tweet, you're going to do all those, can I cancel you, uncancel you. That's why we shouldn't live up to us.
Mm.
So, but when you get back to that, and we withdraw, and I think I always say, it's good to withdraw.
Take a moment.
Just take a moment, pause. Pause and reflect. And then come back to yourself. And then go back to with who you are.
There are good examples where Tebe reflects on how, from the word go, some people have a faulty start. So it's not even as you've risen and you come down. But no one gave you a chance. Jay. Ah, oh. Hi, Lona, Megan, Lona. Hi. You know that thing? Hi, it's Kholo Saro, Nashem. How about Nashem? And that, it's those who don't hear or listen or buy into that that actually really rise.
Right. Yes.
And who thought, do you guys remember when Julius Malema was the laughingstock of woodwork? Do you remember?
Well, I mean,
he puts this in the book. You put this in the book.
I've got it in the book. Yeah. I mean, this book is all encompassing.
Yeah.
You will know the people. And you will learn about other people you did not know from across the continent. Because I went across the continent from Cape to Cairo.
Yeah.
And you remember when Julius was discarded by the ANC?
Yeah, painful.
But all he did was to reframe and find something that he resonates with and use that as his new horse.
Mm.
And we can go through this because one of the things I deal about in the purpose part of the book is refining the clarity of what you stand for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could have called this book a book of personal branding, but I thought it was too hard. Mm-hmm. It is a bit personal branding, a lot more so. But Julius then refined, what is my raison d'être?
Mm.
What is the reason I exist? Or whether it is that or whether you create it. Of course, when you just create a reason for existing,
it's not gonna work.
It will not trip you one day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We'll catch you, and we've got quite a few of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he came back a different person.
Yeah.
But you know, we can see now the.
I must say, you know what is humbling about what you're saying is that. We're going to take a quick break, but I just want to make this point before we go. And when we come back, we'll take your questions and we'll also welcome your tweets and all your voice notes as well. But Tebe doesn't only speak of other people. At the very onset of the book, he speaks of how he has revisited his own ideas in the marketing space, how he thinks he made a mistake here, there, and maybe he needed to revisit some of the things that are even in some books. Books that you've written where you had particular ideas and you are now coming back and saying, well, actually, I've had to rethink about some of those.
Because I think as human beings, we must always be open to questioning ourselves as much as we question others. Because you know, we like to criticize others, but we never criticize ourselves. Mm. So we must always be willing to look in the mirror. So obviously, being Western trained, I had to rethink about this.
Mm.
And you know, when I was invited to speak in Morocco, And then I stopped for a minute. I speak to Morocco every year, last 7 years. When I was asked to speak with Morocco, and they said, we want you to speak on personal branding. I was like, personal branding, of course, I've done it forever. Then I'm thinking, but I've actually made a mistake because I've been taking a Western-centric approach to doing this. And then I had to reimagine, as an African, how does an African build a reputation and a personal brand, if you will? And that's what Rooted in Rising is about. It's also about understanding that for us, we always, always measure our well-being, our success, our identity by where we come from, not where we are in society. And I had to reframe my entire thinking around that to that space.
You also took a moment where you were presented with rejection to reflect on why someone who you had wanted to contribute to your book said no. I think that must have been a painful moment.
Well, I mean, I knew him so well. It was a seasoned gentleman, white gentleman, in the 70s. I said, can you please endorse my book, Johan? Johan Redeling is a great guy. I said, would you endorse my book on personal branding? Because it's part of those lessons. Mm-hmm. And he says to me, well, personal branding is about beating your chest. It's about showing off. I don't agree with that thing. But then if you look at that, there was a Harvard article, a big Harvard 24 pager, which came out beginning of this year on personal branding. And my good friend Mzamo Masito, I sent it to him. He says, do you see this? I said, oh my God, let me go get it. I read it all. Then when I look at all that as part of that reflection as well, and I said to myself, you know, I think Johan was right. Because here in African culture,
it's about us, the collective.
It's about us. It's never about you.
Yeah.
And how we reflect on this journey is reflecting on our success is about how my success impacts your success, you the villagers. I know there are lots of villagers here, and there's some people who don't know. But some of us are villagers.
15 minutes to 9 o'clock. We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to get the mic roving around, take questions, and you're very welcome to also do that. A call in, send a text, send a voice note as well. We're very happy to do that. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back after this.
Voice note, Phimelo Mutine on WhatsApp. 063-688-0959. Point of view.
Keep connected with us.
Kaya 959. On the street.
On the air.
Us coming to you live from Kaya House, and Tebe Galafing is my guest. You can hear a buzz, right? So there is a live audience here with us, and we are going to be taking questions. Hello, hello. Yes. And I'm also going to take your voice notes as well, so do not worry, I'll do that. But I have got a few people in studio that we're going to ask to maybe say hello, your name, and then your questions, please.
Hello.
Hello, we can hear you.
Good evening, Dr. Tewa.
Hey.
My question is going to require you to be quite vulnerable. When we talk about successful people, we tend to reflect on the things that they've overcome, forgetting sometimes that there's always something that you're working on, even when you're successful. And sometimes, you know, we glorify the victory after the shameful things people have done or the things that people have struggled with. But then we will villainize the shameful things that people are still busy going through and working through. So what I'd like to ask you is, what is something that currently you are still working through on your journey of still becoming, even though you are already successful, maybe in your professional life, in your personal life, as a marketer, as an African, what is something that one day it will be in your 15th book to show how even more successful you are, but for today it's still something that maybe might be looked down upon because you're still working through it and becoming through it?
Excellent question.
First, I must say I'm not in therapy. I'm not in therapy. I've never been to a psychologist. So I'm not working on anything like in that space. But the second thing is I've always been successful because that success is how I feel about myself. That enables me to approach everything confidently. So, and I made an example the other day that everybody knows I'm an incredible sportsman from the couch with my remote. But when it comes to physical sports, Everybody knows, my friends will tell you, I retired from football at the age of 14, at the top of my incompetence. So when I reached the point when I said, you are not going to get any better, it was my very best. So that's why I say I'm a very successful person, right? But then, of course, having been number one my whole school life, of a bit.
Doing the trick in 6 months or was doing it four months?
No, I did my trick in 3 months.
In 3 months, yes, yes.
I know, but we mustn't say things like we're putting pressure on the Baka engine. But just saying, having said so, obviously, I mean, I write about these things. I talk about them all the time. I talk about the fact that having been successful in school all the time, failing at wits. I don't think I'm not vulnerable. It's just a sense of truth. You can go find it. It's there. So if you say something different, they're going to Google you. They're going to ask your friends. They'll find it. They'll tell you that Utosi Noto go. But okay, I never wasn't that bad. I actually got 47 for business economics, 47 for law, and 47 for accounting. Okay, by Angie's standards, they'll be very successful. But in my standards, it was not the standard. And Covert University.
47 was your number.
But I just thought, I can't be that equally dumb. How could you
47%.
Get
47%.
47. But I had to pivot afterwards. I had to come back and then say, how do I reimagine myself, reapply myself, and move forward? But I think the mistake that we make in society is when we get derailed, most of us then get written off,
mm-hmm.
and most of us then get looked down
yeah.
on. A derailment, by the way, I think it's Mother Teresa, somebody said it. He says, failure is just an opportunity to begin again intelligently.
Yes.
We've got another question in the studio.
Hi, Tebe, hello everyone. Uh-huh. I'm the voice behind Zola 7, so I'm just delivering a message verbatim. Enjoy, my love. Umjele, congrats. Besicela i-book. Amehlo awasavumi.
No, how was all against the jalo semnani? Mzambiza or Mkwana. But you know what's so interesting? Because I've never, I've just finished The Traveler.
Yes.
As an audiobook. So it's crazy. I had to record for 6 days in a row, 3 hours every day. Because people said, you can't AI your voice.
Yes.
Because the voice
please.
Has got nuances, has got all those things. So I had to read the whole voice. So sometimes I'm going to sound like Treasure Chabalala.
Yes.
And others I'm going to sound like, yeah, that's a book. Just deal with it. It's me. So Chela Guti, Rooted and Rising requires you to, it's an interesting book because it is not your typical book. And as you know, it's a book with music.
Yes, we've got a surprise. Yes.
Oh, there's a surprise. Yes. Wow. It's a book with a... with the worksheets,
yeah.
You can write things.
You can reflect.
Yeah. It's a book with symbolism. Every chapter's got a symbol from the part of the continent, whether it's from North Africa, South Africa, Kenya. It's a symbolism. So it's a very immersive book. So it's not a book for those people who read between Joburg and Cape Town. It's a book for those who are on the way to New York. They need 14 hours. Just to deal with the content.
But it's also a book, you can do a chapter and put it down. And then come back and go to another chapter and go back and forth like that.
It's not a soap opera.
No, it's not a soap opera. No, it's not a soap opera. We've got another question. Hi, let's go.
Zing, zing.
Did you see her?
Wow. I only know her from radio.
Straight
she's
from
live.
Yes. Yes. With a TV face.
With a TV face.
Wow. So I thought, good evening, everyone. I'm Kukule Tumfuki. I thought I'd take the opportunity to jump on and ask a question. Two of my favorite people, both are immensely influential in my life and people that I've managed to work with. Ospimino is an amazing big sister, and Tebe is the big brother who always guides me sometimes. You know, Kuku, we need to consider this. So I must say, firstly, it's beautiful to see this come full circle. When Tebe first told me about this book, we were actually en route on a flight to Cape Town, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
I didn't expect to see each other, and he was showing me all the details and the nuances of the book. But if there's anything I want to ask you, Tebe, is that you've done a formidable amount of work across the continent and across the world in really being an ambassador for Africa. And I'm quite keen to get your views on the evolution of Africa's representation on the global stage and if we are showing up as South Africans and as Africans in arts and culture, in sports, as well as the business community, are we doing enough to actually build on the connections that yourself and so many other peers actually try to entrench and deepen.
Let me say this. Despite the best efforts of our governments and our leaders to bring us down, we are rising as a people. We are rising independently. We don't need government to tell us amapiano is wonderful. We just have to do amapiano and it takes off. We don't need a government to tell us to go back to amaXhosa and take our culture and interpret it into a wearable culture, if you will. Mm. We just do it and now and launch in New York and launch in the key capitals and launch in Paris Fashion Week and New York Fashion Week, as well as Lagos Fashion Week and Dakar Fashion Week. So are we doing enough? Yes, we are doing enough, despite everybody's efforts to deny us our who we are. Mm. So we're doing amazing. And I think, let us give our president, Cyril Ramaphosa, the plug for what we did during the G20.
Yes.
If you look at the declaration that was concluded here in Africa, it was, to me, a pivot. It was the highest profile change of who we are as a people, where the declaration is anchored on Ubuntu, which is about as African as you are going to be, not just South African. It's anchored around that, but it's also anchored around putting our agenda on the declaration and putting African priorities forward. So what that says, we are rediscovering. We have rediscovered our voice. Mm. We discovered our power in the world, and we are asserting ourselves. Are we doing enough? Not enough. We are still lost, but we are not as, I think it's a great, the slaves, who were one of the slaves that was released, we gained freedom. And they said, we ain't what we ought to be. We ain't what we can be. But thank God, we ain't what we once was.
Yes.
So we ain't what we once was. We move forward.
Yeah. We've got another question.
Good evening to everyone.
Hello.
I'm so privileged to be here. I'm a strong supporter of Kaya FM.
Thank you.
And I was at the gym, believe it or not.
Yes.
Looks might not reveal it, but I was. And at times you're at a place at the wrong time. When I went there at Rosebank, they said there's no water. I wanted to be in the sauna. I heard Gugu saying, if you're not here, you're going to miss out.
Oh.
And I've always aspired to meet you, Pamela.
Yes.
Sorry, I might be going out of context, but with age, we've got long stories.
Tebe, understand. Tebe, understand.
But Dr. Tebe, what a privilege. What I want to say, or rather ask, is do you intend to have an ad my more? And also, at your age, you look very young. I'm sure you don't have grandkids. But all I want to
all
say
kids.
Is... all kids, right? But what I want to say is, how do you intend to bridge the gap? At the moment, we are so challenged with technology. Mm. A lot of us is trying to get the grip of it. Mm. And a lot of people are doing so many shortcuts, whether you call it cheating or whatever. But I'm thinking about the people who are underprivileged, like probably in the villages. And AI also won't replace everything that we do, because you need the human nature. What is your intention to bridge that gap? And what are you doing to coach the people in the village?
Mm.
Thank you. By the way, the most underprivileged people are the ones in the suburbs. So the people who are in the rural areas are more privileged because they are clear on who they are.
Mm.
They speak their language.
Mm.
They dress their culture.
Mm.
And are comfortable in who they are and where they come from. But us, the underprivileged in the suburbs, We're the ones who say when our children speak, when children speak to our children, we speak English to them. And when we ask them, why are you speaking English? But the teacher says we must speak English because it makes it easier for them to understand. Mm-hmm. And we're like, but we grew up in a township. We spoke our languages, and look at us, we're able to, that consciousness of moving from culture to culture is easy. So I think part of how do we bridge this is, what we're doing today is part of that bridging. Mm-hmm. Part of that bridging, because the people who need the most fixing are not the people in the rural areas, are us here. So part of the bridging that we need to do is to get us back to the village.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Yeah.
Right, Tele, hi, my name is Thabang Makubela. I'm going to give context before I ask my question. A couple of years ago, I'm at my late grandmother's house, and it's around 5:30 in the morning, and she comes into the bedroom that I was sleeping in, and she starts to wake me up. She loved telling stories, right? So she wakes me up, and she says to me, Thabang, are you sleeping? I say to her, Mama, no, I'm up. You can tell me whatever it is that you want to tell me. So she starts telling me a story. Fast forward months later, does the same thing, comes into the bedroom, wakes me up. She says to me, are you sleeping? I'm like, yes, I am. She says, wake up. I want to tell you a story, right? And randomly she says to me, if a police officer came into this house right now and said to me, Mama, your son Thabang has killed somebody, I'm going to look at that police officer and I'm going to tell him, that's not my son. You're talking nonsense. Get out of my house. So you can imagine it's very early in the morning. I'm confused. She continues the story and says, if a police officer came into this house and said, Mama, your son Thabang has killed somebody. Here's a video of him killing this person. And I see that it's Thabang. I'm still going to tell that police officer, that's not my son. Get out of my house. And I didn't get it. I only got the epiphany years later that she was talking to me about love, right? And so my question to you is, in all your pursuits, in all your efforts, your successes, your failures, your relationships, etc., what has been the role of love? Hmm. That's my question.
Where do you find Thabang? I think Thabang's great. Thabang's grandmother was deep. Very. Thabang's mother was. The grandmother was very dramatic.
Are you joking? You speak of your mother's and grandmother's love like that?
Correct.
In your book?
But she didn't wake me up at 5. The only people who woke us up at 5 was the police officers coming to look for the dorm passes in the middle of a township.
You know, Tevez says these things that teachers asked you to take over classrooms to teach because they loved you so much and they believed in you so much.
But because they were also drunk and somebody needed to help them. So.
Okay,
But I think, Thabang, it was actually your grandmother speaking to you. To me, it wasn't actually love. To me, it was values. Because what she was saying to you was, how I raised you, how I molded you.
That's not my teaching.
That's not my teaching.
Yeah.
And she was just reminding you to me. She was just reminding you that whatever happens, Thabang, always come back home. Always come back to how I raised you. What made you who we are. Mm. So to me, that's how I look at it. So, of course, love is important. Love is important because your grandmother, my grandmother was interesting, was an amazing woman, Motswana woman, she always, she never put any pressure on me. She guided me gently. She never said, don't do this, do this. She just, as we say, you know, our children don't learn what you tell them. They learn what they see. Mm. So my grandmother just gently showed me how we do things, how she does things, and I just observed. That's why I walk as fast as she used to do, because she used to walk fast. Mm. And I measure success by the small things, because she never measured success by the big things. Yeah. So, and she, because how they teach with examples. They sit around the Dover stove, but you can't relate to Thabang, because you use the electric one, right?
Yeah. His is the one with Siri.
The one that talks to you.
He tells the stove to cook.
But I think, you know, they use stories to teach us about love. And my grandmother always did that. And, you know, they send you to the future in an interesting way. When you grow up, you must remember. Don't forget where you come from. Do you know when your mother was doing X? Do you know your uncle ke khamor sofela? Don't be like next door. And then you know how grandmothers are Pema. You know how they used to be. We are in the house by the stove.
Yes.
It's just us. She's talking about the neighbors. Yeah. She says, next door. Grandma, they can't hear you. They're on the other side. But she's gossiping.
Yes.
No, I think she's talking about the love, about the values, that whatever you do, come back home.
Before we move the mic around to another person, I want to ask you an uncomfortable conversation.
Mm.
Yes, it's uncomfortable, but we've got to go there. So you spoke a little bit on, and I know it was tongue-in-cheek about Dudula, but I want you to talk about, part of this book is about coming back to self.
Yes.
And how we've drifted so much from being Africans.
Yes.
Part of it, though, is about our past as a people under apartheid and colonialism. And South Africans, unfortunately, drifted so far from who they are that they forgot themselves that they're Africans. South Africans today, when they speak of Angola, they say in Africa.
I'm going to Africa.
They don't see that this is Africa. Mm. Well, how are we going to, or what does it have to take for us to realize we need the work done on ourselves to see who we are? Before asking others to transform themselves, because we think we're special.
Yeah, this exceptionalist thing. South African exceptionalism.
Yeah, of course.
And we think that South Africa is the United States.
Yes.
Of Africa. And we are not the rest of the world. And you know, I remember, I can't remember if he's here or if he's in a traveler. I write about, must remember now, when I arrived in Ghana, one of the trips, I've been to Ghana the most, maybe over 100 plus times. When I arrived at the passport, immigration, he took my passport during the xenophobic attacks, 2000 something, can't remember. And took my passport and looked at it and says, why do you guys do this to us after what we've done to help you? Because you know what Kwame Nkrumah says? He says the independence of Ghana is meaningless unless the rest
all of
the continent
us, yes.
is mm-hmm. independent. Because he always saw he always saw Africans as one big village. And the same with Kenneth Kaunda, helping South Africa. Kenneth Kaunda said to me, the late Kenneth Kaunda, great Kenneth Kaunda, said to me over dinner at his house, and he says to me, you know, Tebe, my parliament wanted to get me out of government because I was spending more time and money and effort and resources housing your people, if South Africans here, prioritizing their needs instead of putting the resources into lifting my Zambians. So how we're going to get back to ourselves, even as South Africans, is the things you and many other people are doing, are right, rooted and rising. The book gets into school somewhere, gets into somebody reads it. The person gets to understand us and our collectiveness. Mm. The failure that we've had in South Africa is to institutionalize our history, not just as South Africans, but also as Africans. Mm. Because most of us do not know who we are or how we got to where we are. We just thought we sent 5 people to Robben Island, then they came back, and then we were free. And to me, that's a challenge that we have, that we need to institutionalize our story as South Africans, but also the rest of the continent, as a collective village, and get us in schools, get us in universities. And I'm proud that our University of Johannesburg, next year for the honors students, they said, this is our book for the honors students. We want this
book.
Excellent.
A great clap for that. Tebe, we've got... Remember we said we've got guests here?
We have guests.
Yes, these are guests. They're family now, but they were
guests. Family.
When they arrived, they were guests.
These are villagers. Makaba, Asekaya.
And so you signed some books for some... Let him read out the names. You signed some books for
By the way, I'm the reason you want me to read out the books.
I can't read your handwriting.
The hieroglyphics is too much for you.
A doctor. That's a doctor's handwriting.
Hieroglyphics.
That's a doctor's
original
handwriting.
This one to Farai. Mm-hmm. Who is Farai?
Farai is there.
Who's Farai?
So you'll see surprised looks in the room.
Farai, we have a book for you. Farai, don't be like that. Don't say things like that. What you're supposed to say is, oh my God, I was hoping to buy one.
Well done, well done.
Thank you.
I'm going to cherish this one.
Thank you. Thank you. So what you do, Farai, and what we all should do, is you now take the one that you spend your money on, you sign it on to somebody else that you want to bring back home.
Yes. And then there are two more.
Then there's three. So, wow.
Yes.
And then there's Kopano.
Yes.
You didn't buy one, did you?
Not yet.
No, so.
Thank you so much.
Cheers, Ken. And then, to Pearl. Where's Pearl?
She's, oh, I think she's not coping with the moment.
Oh, Pearl. Oh. Somebody please bring Twin Savers.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So we could do this for 3, 4, 5 hours,
right?
Every day. It's been such a privilege to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming out tonight. I know it's a weeknight. It's a school night. But we appreciate your presence in studio.
These people had no other gig. And they heard that Kunokuja afterwards. But he sorted for today.
We really, really appreciate your presence here with us. We're going to have many, many, many more like these. And Tebe, really, thank you for doing this with us.
No, thank you so much. I mean, I've always been a great fan of Kaya. And I think what you've always done here is remained an authentic brand that tells our story, whether it is through music, whether it's through talk. I think you do that better than many in this town and this continent. And I think this idea today is really, really out of the box for me. Mm-hmm. Because what you're doing is you're taking radio beyond the traditional delivery of radio. You are bringing the people who make radio.
Yeah.
And you're giving, because some of these people here, they clearly dress for radio. But that's not my problem. But thank you so much.
Tebet, before we go, as we celebrate the moment and the book, you did something quite remarkable with this book. You decided to fuse music. As you were weaving the stories, you were thinking music and your famous friends, because you do have these friends, you just drop these names. I mean, he does that so well. Lebo M.
Lebo, you guys, is not your friend? No, you know, I work with Lebo M obviously to put together the playlist, because I wanted to make sure that, because part of our culture, speak about culture.
Yeah.
Our culture is the music, it's the symbolism, it's the practices. The only thing I left out of the book, because the publishers were fighting with me, was the food. Because
yeah.
I wanted to put a meal for every chapter. Mm. But next year, I think we'll do that anyway as an update. But buy this one first. If you buy enough of it, I'll put food into it for next year.
What was the brief to him?
So the brief was quite simple. I said the 7 primary chapters, the 7 P's, starting obviously with people as the anchor, ending with protection as the last one. I said, what music can we put into every chapter that seems to capture the story of the chapter?
Yeah.
And it's us. I mean, this book had to be different because we're not your ordinary people. I'm from Kimberley. Mm-hmm. It's a city of firsts. Mm-hmm. So we had to do something first.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to have a wonderful time with that playlist put together by Lebo M as well as Tebe. But Tebe, as usual, please stay around. Don't leave. This is home. This is Kaya. Guys, don't leave.
There's food. Just say there's food.
There's food. And we will do this again another time. Thank you very much,
Thank
Tebe.
You so much.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.